Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
It may seem a little pessimistic to characterize Henry Aaron as the last hero, which is the title of Howard Bryant's new biography of the great ballplayer. Maybe another heroic figure will emerge in the post-performance-enhancing drug era, assuming that era ever comes, and Mr. Aaron will be redesignated as next to last. Not that this would diminish the accomplishments of Henry Aaron, who is still best known for breaking the career home run record that had been held by Babe Ruth. When I had the opportunity to speak with Howard Bryant recently, we began by listening together to Vin Scully's call of that record-breaking dinger.
One ball and no strikes. Aaron waiting. The outfield deep and straight away. Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone.
Now, Mr. Scully let the crowd roar without interruption for almost 2 minutes after he said that, and then he provided his take on the significance of that home run and its aftermath.
What a marvelous moment for baseball. What a marvelous moment for Atlanta and the state of Georgia. What a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the Deep South for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol. And it is a great moment for all of us, and particularly for Henry Aaron, who was met at...
Howard, was that an overstatement?
I don't think it was an overstatement. I think it was a great call by Vin Scully, and it's a forgotten call in its own way, because we always hear the Milo Hamilton call, which is accompanied with the video whenever we see it on television. It's not something that we think about today as being overly important. But at the time, you have to remember, he was the first African-American star of any sport to play in the Deep South. And the strategy of the heavy hitters down there, of Ivan Allen, the mayor of Atlanta, and Jimmy Carter, soon to be governor, and Andrew Young and Dr. King, all of them felt that at some point, to become big league ready, to become a big city, you had to have sports. Sports was going to be the thing that separated you from your past. So it was not a small thing.
I was surprised to learn from your book that Henry Aaron would tell a different story about his origins each time he was asked about them. That sounds more like Satchel Paige or maybe Bill Lee. Why did Henry Aaron do that?
Well, I think he was a little nervous and a little embarrassed. I think he felt overmatched when it came to public speaking. He hated public speaking. He was a little intimidated about his lack of education and certainly wanted to be private. I think one of the things that people have always said about him was that he is an introvert who was placed in an extrovert's role. He is not comfortable with the public life and hasn't ever really been. He's gotten much, much better at it. I think he enjoys the fact that people respect him and the fact that he's had success. But he's not Ted Williams. He was not Willie Mays or not one of those people who, when the spotlight went on, he immediately got into character.
Chuck Tanner, who eventually managed in the major leagues, knew Henry Aaron in the minors as a fellow player. And he told you that Aaron, quote, made everything look so easy that even the writers hated him at first. Does that perhaps begin to explain the chip that Henry Aaron seemed to carry on his shoulder?
Well, certainly because of what it translated to. And what it translated to was a fair amount of racism in the way he was perceived. If you look at Joe DiMaggio, it was very funny. Henry would always bring this up, that DiMaggio's silence equals class. My silence equals stupidity. He's not exactly wrong about this. He moved and he glided. That's what Chuck Tanner, I remember we sat in Bradenton, Florida, having this conversation, and he talked about how much Henry glided. And yet he was not portrayed in those early years in the 50s as a graceful player, but more of a kind of a minstrel character. They called him Slow Motion Henry. And I can't think of any other players that they referred to that the newspapers called a shuffler. Time magazine in 1957 wrote a story with the headline, The Talented Shuffler. And Henry was aware of that. And he was aware that this is how he'd been perceived in a devastating profile in the Saturday Evening Post, which essentially referred to him as Step and Fetch It. You don't forget that.
I want to present one statistic to suggest just how consistent Henry Aaron was as a hitter. From 1957, his fourth season in the majors, until 1973, he never hit more than 47 home runs, but he hit fewer than 30 only once. How unusual is that level of production over such a long period of time?
Well, it's incredible. And I think the most incredible statistic for me, I mean, those are great stats, because it shows you year in, year out. Henry used to have a saying that he told all the young players, don't take the ballpark home and don't take your house to the ballpark. Mm-hmm. So whatever your issues are, separate them. And he was very good at compartmentalizing. The stat that I like most about Henry Aaron is that here is a player who had 3,771 hits for a power hitter, 3,771. And Joe Torre told me the story about how in 1963-64, you could see him distance himself from being that consistent line drive hitter into a power hitter. And I always wonder what his career numbers would have been if he had continued on that arc. He might have been the first player. He would have passed Cobb. He would have had 4,000 hits and 600 home runs instead of 755. I think it's fascinating to be that good to decide which all-time record you want to break.
With the exception of a very few teammates, Dusty Baker and Ralph Garr among them, Aaron was not especially close to his contemporaries. But has there ever been a player more respected by his peers?
I don't think so. I think that when I went through the research, and one of the ways you start is, okay, where do you begin with a guy who's been in the public eye for 50 years? I just went and made a list of his teammates and who was alive, who was not, who could I talk to. And the common thread was that nobody really had a bad word to say about him. And it wasn't that they were shining me on. It was simply that they respected his professionalism. And he didn't really give the public or his teammates a lot to criticize. He was a professional. He didn't necessarily go out and drink with the boys that much. He wasn't a carouser. He wasn't bombastic on the field. He didn't show up anybody. He just did his job. And I think that personality is what made his story so compelling when you think about the societal pressures he went through when it came time to break the record in 1974. And then also 33 years later, when it came time for his record to be broken, how the public would look to him.
Speaking of closeness to teammates and others, to what extent did Henry Aaron cooperate with you in the production of the book?
Well, I first started to work on this project back in March of 2006. And essentially, it took me 18 months for him to speak to me. He was not enthusiastic about the book. He was not helpful in any way for that first 18 months. And ironically, it was at Boston University when I spoke to Henry for the first time. It was on Jackie Robinson's birthday, January 31st, 2008, and we had a fantastic conversation. That was the beginning of the thaw, and we spoke for a few hours. He did not give me a lot of time. I did go to his house. I did interview his wife, and I interviewed some family members, and I did get a chance to see him on the go in certain places for memorabilia signings. But it wasn't as though this was an authorized biography. He did not ask for any money. He did not ask for any creative control or any veto power. And he also did something that I thought was the nicest thing you could do with a potential biographer. He did not make that phone call to all of his friends, hey, there's a guy writing a book about me. Don't talk to him. He didn't do that either.
As Aaron approached Babe Ruth's record of 714 career home runs, he's reported to have received a lot of hate mail, including numbers of death threats. You present stories in the book that suggest that Aaron allegedly kept the letters and would reread them as the years went by.
Sure.
Why did he do that?
That's a good question, and that's a question that Henry doesn't always answer easily. I think when you talk to his friends, the people very close to him, they will tell you that it's a reminder. It's a very sober, very bitter reminder about his journey. And that was also one of the things that I found so compelling about him, is that he does provide a timeline for America. He's a black man born in 1934 in the Deep South, in the Great Depression. And one of the themes that I kept asking myself during this project was, which vision of Henry Aaron wins for him? Is it when you were a kid and you just watched the humiliation of your family, of your parents? Or is it today as a 76-year-old national icon who's slept in the White House and he's met kings and queens and he is unquestioned in his respect? And then I realized that it was not a fair question to ask him, because You can't have one without the other.
Henry Aaron was, of course, elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame in his first year of eligibility, 5 years after his retirement in 1976. He was honored by two presidents, Bill Clinton and George W. Bush. As you mentioned, he slept in the White House the
whole
deal.
His wife always says.
Yet, as he's portrayed in your book, he seems still to feel insufficiently appreciated. Why is that?
Part of the reason, it was one of the reasons for doing the book, is that when you think about Henry Aaron, it's always in comparison to someone else. When he first came up, he was naturally compared to Mays. They were the superstar players of their time in the National League. As he came closer to the record, he was compared to Babe Ruth. As his record came close to falling, and then when it eventually fell, he was being compared to Barry Bonds. And then you find out that his desire was not to be compared to any of those guys, but to follow in the footsteps of Jackie Robinson. He was a very serious, Henry Aaron's a very serious man whose goal was not to be considered a great baseball player. It was to use his baseball abilities to do something substantial, to be a person of substance.
In the introduction to The Last Hero, you quote an unnamed Henry confidant, I don't know who it was, as saying, quote, "Willie Mays ceased being a person the day he retired. Who did Willie Mays ever help except Willie?" You included that in the introduction. Did it strike you as a fair characterization of Willie Mays?
Well, I put it in the introduction as a counter to this notion that Henry Aaron was going to be viewed simply for what he did on the baseball field. And in comparison to Mays, the reason why Henry still has relevance today is because he is in retirement. He is a player who really wanted to break down the doors that Robinson never got to. He was there for integration in the front office, integration in the manager's office, to make sure that African American players still had opportunities outside of the game or even in the game because the numbers are declining so much. And in Mays's case, the narrative of Willie Mays really has stopped after he retired in 1973. The point of it was not necessarily to criticize Willie, except for the fact that they did have a fair and strong rivalry with Jackie Robinson involved in there too, trying to get Willie involved in social causes, trying to get him to use his power and his celebrity to better the lot of African Americans. It was also to say that there is a second act here, and Henry Aaron had that second act, and Willie Mays, quite frankly, did not.
Mays, of course, helped a lot of people. He did it privately by visiting hospitals and always was open to kids, although not so much to adults. But on the larger stage,
sure,
not
and
so
that's
much.
A tough thing. It's a really difficult question because it's not up to me and it's not up to you. It's not up to anybody to decide who did enough.
Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly not up to Jackie Robinson to decide that his way was the better way. And I think that the thing that I enjoy about this, what makes me passionate about this, is that this period where these men played was one of the most, if not the most significant, to me it is, the 1947 to about 1970 is the most significant period in American history in terms of moving from one society to another society, a society of inclusion. And with Jackie Robinson, his point, and Henry Aaron followed it, was everybody, especially if you're African American during this period, you had to stand up and say, look, here's where I stand on this, and we want to know where you stand. And Mays didn't do that, and Roy Campanella didn't do that, and I gravitated more toward the people who did.
Uh-huh. All right, regarding Barry Bonds, who broke Henry Aaron's home run record, you quote Aaron as saying, if a player is elected to the Hall of Fame who's known to have used steroids, there ought to be an asterisk or something mentioned on the plaque that he used steroids. In the record section at the end of your book, where it says Aaron is second in career home runs, were you tempted to include an asterisk there to indicate that he's still sort of first?
No, he's the people's champion. Barry Bonds is the home run leader. And I really enjoyed the interview that I had with Dr. Harry Edwards, a sociologist out in California, who had said that for the first time, you've got a gap. You've got the record holder, who is Barry Bonds, and the standard bearer, who is Henry Aaron. And for the first time in baseball history, the standard of excellence and the record holder are two different people. Henry Aaron remains the standard of excellence.
It's an interesting distinction because you do also mention that the Braves locker room into which Henry Aaron walked on every game day featured a great big glass jar full of greenies,
amphetamines,
and they were just as illegal as steroids without a prescription at the time, and yet I don't know whether Aaron was taking them, but some of his teammates certainly were.
No, sure, and all those players, Henry Aaron included, admitted to using them on occasion, if not frequently. I made the distinction not to equate, and in my writing today, I don't equate anabolic steroids with amphetamine simply because I'm a muscle mass person. There's a big difference between creating and building muscle mass and alertness. Sure, being more alert makes you a better player. But I do make the distinction between performance-enhancing drugs and workplace doping. To me, amphetamines are an example of workplace doping, no different than truck drivers or college kids who are trying to cram their way through the semester. I'm not saying that it's not important and that those drugs aren't illegal, but steroids are a totally different animal. Human growth hormone, gene doping, gene therapy, totally different animal.
Howard Bryant is the author of The Last Hero, A Life of Henry Aaron, published by Pantheon Books. Howard, thanks very much for coming in.
My pleasure.
My conversation with Howard Bryant, the author of The Last Hero, A Life of Henry Aaron, will be featured on this week's program. I'll also be talking about the NBA playoffs with Kevin Hench, who confidently told me a month ago that the Celtics were toast. I wonder if we still have that tape.
The team is like the family dog where you're really wondering if its quality of life has diminished to the point where it's time to euthanize.
We'll have a story about Diego Maradona, the coach of Argentina's soccer team, who is perhaps even now trying to teach his players how to punch the ball into the goal while the referee isn't looking. We'll hear about the establishment of the new, utterly fan-friendly NASCAR Hall of Fame in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I will consider the case of Floyd Landis, who this week finally admitted to ESPN.com's Bonnie D. Ford that he used performance-enhancing drugs. So join us, and remember, you can always listen to the program at onlyagame.org.